Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague, Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics from London, observing net zero, a quest not so many years ago by all of the Europeans. I remember them gathering at Glasgow, where Boris Johnson, then the PM, made a vow about net zero. However, Joe, a very good evening to you. I come to you with a detail from the most recent state election in Germany, West Germany, North Rhine-Westphalia, largest of the German states, 18 million people of the 81 million in Germany. This is coal mining in the old days and manufacturing, agriculture, bond. It's big. The vote Sunday showed a loss in confidence in the Green Party from 20% previously to 13.5%. Maybe they went to AfD. Maybe they just didn't show up. But there's no fever for Greens as there was for many years. The AfD is taking up a lot of that fever. However, we're focused on the Greens. Has Germany, the leader in net zero, have they dropped out? Good evening to you, Joe.
Hey, John. Well, I mean, Germany's dropout from the net zero agenda is going to be a slow and painful process, but I definitely detect signs that it is happening there and in other parts of Europe as well. So remember, net zero refers to the policy ambition for major economies to achieve zero carbon dioxide emissions on a net basis by the middle of this century. And the purpose of this is to try to ameliorate or reduce or control or eliminate climate change. And Europe loved net zero. It's hard to describe to an American audience the depth of the spiritual infatuation that Europeans have felt for this policy project over the past decade or two. Net zero became a core element of economic strategies over here. It completely dominated energy policy across Europe. You know, so many aspects of your daily life, regulations about the kind of cars you could drive and the sort of fuel that you would put in them. You know, Europe's enthusiasm for diesel-fueled cars instead of gasoline, as is common in the U.S., this all traces back to carbon emissions and net zero. And now voters seem to be fed up with it. So in Germany, the star of the Green Party, which has been the great exponent of the net zero climate agenda, is fading. There is enormous anxiety in Germany and in general about the fate of the auto industry, because net zero would require a transition to battery electric vehicles, which German automakers are struggling to do. Here in the UK, there's all sorts of opinion polling that suggests that the voters are just totally lost interest in this, are not prepared to pay higher prices for energy or anything else in order to achieve net zero. In France, it seems to be falling apart. And so I think the big story that is happening in Europe is that voters are really falling out of love with the climate agenda and no longer really believe a lot of the talk of the climate apocalypse that they've been hearing from the media and from activists and from many politicians for the past few years. And it's going to lead to big shakeups in politics and also potentially in the economies over here the longer that this falling out of love continues.
What I liked about your new column is that you introduced the 17th century. On the one hand, we have King Charles. On the other hand, we have this fellow known as Cromwell. Here they come, battling. the Puritans versus the Libertines, the Restoration versus the future is quieter and less energy. Is that part of the conversation, Joe, not just the impracticality of net zero by 2050, not just the loss of jobs across Germany, but also because Europe has turned away from the scolding arguments of the climate alarmists?
In a way, I think that is a big part of what's going on here, because the climate movement has always been about the things that you can't have. So, I mean, the activists will talk in terms of the supposed economic benefits of the green energy transition and all of the green jobs that this is supposed to be creating. And note that that never actually seems to happen. The renewable energy always seems to be more expensive, and the green jobs are never as numerous or quite as good as the dirty old jobs that they are trying to displace. So you have that, but then, I mean, you also had this move toward greater climate asceticism, because for a long time, sort of the impetus of climate policy is that it was making someone else do things, particularly, you know, those big corporations. And so the climate policy was all about forcing large industrial companies to change the way that they did business or to invest in this thing or that thing. And the costs were definitely present in the economy, but they were very well concealed. And one thing that has changed is that climate policy has now grabbed all of that low-hanging fruit. So, you know, if you sort of look at the carbon intensity of the European economy, in particular, the amount of carbon emitted per dollar of GDP, Europe has become much less carbon intensive than it used to be, but it still is not enough to achieve net zero. So they are reaching a point where if you want to get further reductions in your carbon emissions, individual households and voters are going to start feeling the pinch. And that's where you start having conversations about, okay, you're going to have to drive a very different kind of car. You can't have your internal combustion engine anymore. You have to drive a battery electric vehicle. Or you're going to have to eat less meat because animals are more carbon intensive than plants are. Or you're going to have to go on fewer vacations because we can't burn as much aviation fuel if we're going to meet these targets, and on down the list. And I think that what's happening is voters realize that these are the lifestyle sacrifices that they would be expected to make in service of these policies. They are not willing to do it anymore.
Is the leadership on board with the retreat, Joe, or is this from the grassroots?
Well, it depends on which leaders you're talking about. So, I mean, John, you were just asking about this sort of spirit of the climate Puritans versus the Restoration libertinism. And a great example of that is Marine Le Pen in France. She leads the insurgent right-wing National Rally Part, formerly the National Front. Definitely very good at having her finger on the pulse of ordinary French voters. And she's concluded that air conditioning is a winning election issue for her. So she started this big campaign about rolling out air conditioning more widely in France. So her pitch is, look, instead of forcing you to give up meat so that we can, you know, pretend that we're affecting the climate, except that it won't work because China and India aren't on board anyway, we're going to have more air conditioning and focus on making you more comfortable if, in fact, the weather is going to get hotter. And it's really noticeable that a politician like her thinks that that is a winning formula. And in other places, the Alternative for Germany, which is the insurgent right party in that country, very skeptical of the climate agenda and promising voters that they are not going to push forward with any of these net zero policies. Nigel Farage in the UK, you know, leader of the Reform UK party, very skeptical of the net zero climate agenda and promising voters something different. So I think there are politicians around Europe who are really noticing that this might be a viable path for them to win elections by promising not to do this stuff that voters are less enthusiastic about now.
In the polling, can you tell if the error made by the leadership was alarmism or just cost? Can we tell the difference between it costs too much and I'm scared No, I'm not scared. They're scaring me. Who gets more blame for the failure?
Well, it's a funny thing, and it's not entirely clear right now. I think that the two factors are related because there's a sense in which voters will only panic about the things that they think they can change. So the dynamic of the climate debate for a long time has been this really intense apocalypticism on the part of the climate left and the activist class. I mean, gosh, they were calling the big protests here the Extinction Rebellion, claiming that climate change was going to lead to an extinction level event for humanity, and doing all of these dramatic die-ins on London bridges and that sort of thing. And the public seemed to go along with that for a while. I think there was a long period in Europe where voters seemed to be embracing climate change almost as if it was a form of secular religion. This is particularly intense in Germany. What seems to be happening, though, is that as voters start to grapple with the household costs and realize that they are either unable or unwilling to pay the prices that will be, or the costs that will be demanded of households to take those next steps on the climate agenda, they're realizing, you know, maybe we don't need to worry about this so much after all. And that sounds sort of cynical on the part of voters. And if it is, voters are allowed to be as cynical as anyone else. So you can't blame them for that. But I think there's also the sense that people are starting to look at the world writ large and thinking, well, okay, China is not serious about this. India is not serious about this. The U.S. under President Trump is definitely not serious about pushing forward with this agenda. So why are we going to do all of this to ourselves and then not have any kind of impact on the global climate anyway?
What happened to that heating unit brouhaha about everybody was mandated to get a certain kind of heater? I can't remember what the name of it was.
Well, this was, again, one of those first moments in the UK where you started to see the veneer cracking on net zero, because remember, the vast majority of households in the UK get their hot water and their central heating, the water in the radiators, from a natural gas-fired boiler about the size of a cabinet that hangs out in your kitchen. And the environmentalists were pointing out that if Britain wanted to reduce its carbon emissions, people were going to have to abandon the gas boilers and switch over to electric heat pumps with the electricity coming from renewable sources. And households were not willing to bear the expense. And manufacturers of the gas boilers pushed back against some of these mandates. And politicians realized that there was nothing in it, nothing to profit them electorally from pushing forward with this. And that was the end of that mandate. I haven't heard the word heat pump in the UK in months. No one wants to talk about it.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's in London, writes political economics. When we come back, life in London includes an enormous turnout of marchers on Sunday past. Behind a banner said, "Remigration." What is that? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info, and if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.